Welcome in to the Week 12 edition of the Roost Podcast. We are so glad to be with you today. No, this is not your ears playing tricks on you. This is Matthew giving you the introduction this week. Carter is not here with us, but he will be back on the podcast shortly, just taking a week. Got some other things to attend to, but that's will be just fine. We will, as always, go through a couple housekeeping things, hit on some rice items, and then we have a special guest for you guys this week, Eric Henry with Underdog Dynasty. We thought this was as good a week as any with Rice coming off the bye week and no game to recap to kind of take a big picture look at the conference as a whole and things that were going on, some interesting storylines and whatnot. We kind of took stock a couple weeks ago on Rice's first bye week and figured this was a good as time any to do it again. And I don't know about y'all's preferences, but I kind of like having two bye weeks in the schedule, kind of space it out and kind of take it in chunks, especially the way it worked for Rice with having to get to play half the season, three games, make some tweaks, three games, and finish out. So I know that there were other teams that had some more awkward bye arrangements, but it worked out, I guess, timing-wise pretty well for Rice, just not in the results column. As Rice would have hoped, maybe you can get the two bye spliced in for 2020. We'll see. I guess it happens something around with the Labor Day and then scheduling of week zero, week one. So I guess it could be a couple years before we get back to that. But anyhow, a couple of housekeeping things. If you think it is a great show or not so great, either way, we'd love to get your feedback. Please go ahead and leave us a review. And If you're up for it, please leave some comments with your review. Tell us what you like, what parts of the show you enjoy, what you'd like to hear more of, what you're not a biggest fan of. We are doing this because we enjoy it, but we also want to make sure it's something that y'all are enjoying as well. So wherever you go and listen to your podcast, please leave a review and then take 30 seconds and leave a short comment if you want to tell Carter how much you appreciate him on the show and you miss him being on it. Go ahead and do that, or you know how much you enjoy listening to me or not. We're good either way. So please do that. And then if you want to support the Roost during the season, after the season, whenever, we always have the Roost shop up on the website. You can go ahead and find that. We got t-shirts and mugs and we have a baby onesie. We have all sorts of gear of various things. So use the promo code RICEFIGHT. We'll give you 10% off all of that. Go ahead and order and get it for, I guess you need that sweatshirt for the winter now, which has hit Houston. I know I've had to bundle up recently, which has been bizarre, but here we are. Happens every year. And with the cold weather has brought, I guess, a couple things in Rice Athletics before we transition and get around to football. So I wanted to start with men's basketball since I guess they, from the calendar, got started first. They opened up against Arkansas, and that was not good. I believe the final score there was 91-43 and just got run off the court. And Scott Paris said after that game that, you know, the team that he'd practiced with during all offseason and the team that showed up and played against Arkansas were completely unrecognizable. And he was hoping that getting back home would, you know, kind of calm everybody down, settle everybody out, and play Rice basketball. And that's exactly what they did. They opened up their home slate against Penn, who had just come off the same week had beat Alabama. And is a really well-coached, good team. And Penn had him down, I think it was 8-0 early. And at the point where after the Arkansas game, you were kind of holding your breath and, you know, anxiously hoping that Rice would be able to turn around. And they didn't just turn around. They took off. It was Peyton Moore hitting his shots and Ako Adams, and we saw a good amount of the freshmen, Quincy Oliveri and Max Fiedler, and of course Trey Murphy knocking out outside shots and having a couple good rebounding games. Drew Peterson. It was really a team win, to the point where down early, Rice rallied back, and I think got up all the way up to like a 25-point lead before closing that one out, and then ran away from Wayland Baptist next game. That was a back-to-back, which Paris said he scheduled intentionally because they're going to play, you know, possibly three games in a row during the Bahamas tournament, and he wanted the team to be ready for the grind of playing so many games in a row. But so even playing Penn on Saturday, Wayland Baptist on Sunday, showed no signs of wear at all and just ran over Wayland Baptist, improved to 2-1. And then Northwestern State, their first road game after they picked up those wins, fell behind. They were down 10 in the first half, and it was another moment where you just kind of held your breath. And I think that the difference that I've seen from this year's team to last year's team is last year's team, we saw them go on runs and we saw them get hot and we saw them take good leads, but what we didn't see was them being able to slam the door and close out and fight for, you know, a consistent period and not in spurts. And I think against Northwestern State, what we saw again for at least the second time this year was they came out and they rallied, and Trey Murphy just took over, and he was everywhere in the paint, on the edge, playing ferocious defense, a career high 25 points in that game as Rice rallied from a 10-point deficit and then went out and took a 10-point lead at one point in that game and wins. So at this point, we're sitting here, Rice basketball is 3-1 with win over a really good Penn team. And I think there's some optimism because one, I wanted to see that at the stretch that, or at this part of the season, of how was the team gelling and playing together. And I think the Arkansas loss was kind of an eye opener, and the last three games have been, you know, truthfully, everything that you could have hoped for. So I think we're at a good place with this season, and I'm optimistic. So we'll see where they go from there. And then switching over to the women's side, geez, they look as good as ever, and opened up with a 71-47 win over Nicholls State, played every single player on their roster, including all of their new freshmen that just joined the team, including Lauren Schwartz, who's a very, very talented outside shooter who actually got the start in that one. And Tina Langley has said that she's kind of, you know, playing with the lineups, getting everybody in and kind of seeing what combinations work and gel. And so we'll see how that evolves going forward. But it was pretty encouraging because really the only piece that this team lost last year was Nicole Adamarco, who was a really proficient outside shooter, one of the best three-point shooters that Rice has had in some time. So finding a replacement for her and getting some outside shooting people that can score along with Erica Agumake. I can't talk fast. Yeah. Anyhow, along with Erica and Nancy Mulkey, once they have that, I mean, there's really not much more you could ask for this team. They're supremely talented, and they're going to have a matchup on Sunday with Texas A&M, and that is going to be, you know, potentially a season-changing, program-changing moment, because the NCAA selection committee, that was really the only knock that they had against Rice and their seeding, how they were, I think, if not the lowest seeded ranked team last March. They were one of the two or three. And the chief reason for that was Rice had a couple opportunities last year against UCLA and Texas A&M and in North Carolina to play some good to great teams, and they didn't capitalize. Now, against A&M and UCLA last year, Mulkey wasn't on the court, and I think that's going to be the game changer this year, as she is. So it'll be interesting to see. Trinity Carter for the Aggies is one of the best scorers in the country. Watching her and Erica battle is going to be a good one, and then it'll be a good litmus test for this team. They are absolutely capable of winning this game. We're just going to have to go see if they're able to execute and take control. And geez, how huge would that be, especially getting to do it at Tudor? We had, the volleyball team go take down number one Texas here a couple weeks ago, and that was big. And this would be another really big moment for Rice and for the women's basketball program under Langley. So that would be one to check out. And then if you are on the fence and you maybe haven't been to a women's basketball game or want to know what that's about, I encourage you, like, leave church, pick up some food, come down to Rice Village. We have lots of good food, and then catch the game, because this is going to be two of the better, if not best, teams in the country battling it out. Great athletes, great coaches. Gary Blair at A&M has been doing this for a long time, has a national championship. It's going to be in an incredible atmosphere, and one that you don't want to miss. So please stick around for that and come and support. And then I guess the other one last program that I wanted to hit on, the volleyball team. We mentioned, I guess, in the run-up last week, their big match coming with Western Kentucky. Unfortunately, this time the Owls fell literally just short. They were tied two sets apiece in playing that fifth tiebreaker and ended up losing 16-14, right up to match point a couple times, and it was thrilling and wild. Of course, I guess Western Kentucky getting revenge from Rice beating them on their own court last year, which is going to set up another interesting matchup. Rice is going to have another crack at them more than likely in the conference tournament, and this is a team that does not lose very often. So Western beating Rice twice in the same season sounds like a pretty tough task. So we'll see, but either way, we will be following along with that as well. And we haven't even gotten to football yet. It's crazy. Every time this part of the year kind of sneaks up on me, and you're in the midst of winding down for football season, and for so many programs, there's so many things going on of whether or not that's looking and evaluating at your talent, and especially with this redshirt rule, the new guys coming up, or those fighting for bowl contention or conference titles, and now, of course, you have the college football playoff rankings, which have come out. There's so much going on in football season that everything else just kind of sneaks up on you. And we want to give some airtime, because a lot of those programs have had incredible seasons with volleyball and with the basketball teams. I mean, you're talking about combined starting off 6-1. This is pretty darn good. So lots of good things starting there, and then we can transition a little bit to football and talk some Middle Tennessee, and we will get to that conversation I mentioned with Eric in a little bit. First, I wanted to kind of talk just some big picture thoughts on Middle Tennessee before we get into that interview. So Middle Tennessee has kind of set their season up kind of similar to Rice. Of course, the Owls opened up with Army and Wake Forest and Baylor and Texas and a very, very rigorous non-conference schedule. So this is how Middle Tennessee opened up. They had Michigan in Ann Arbor. Then they played Tennessee State at home, Duke at home, and then they traveled to Kinnick Stadium and played Iowa. So they did get one of those games at home. I guess Rice did get Baylor and Wake Forest at home. But either way, it was pretty high caliber programs. So like Rice, I mean, they beat Tennessee State, unfortunately, for the win column. Rice didn't get any FCS teams this year. I would wager Rice would have fared pretty well against Tennessee State as well. But anyhow, that aside, Middle Tennessee started out 1-3 with that very rigorous schedule. And so for them, they were kind of learning about who their team was and who their program was going to be as the season progressed. And their first real test in conference play was at home against Marshall. And they smacked Marshall around, 124-13. And it was the game that really Middle had control of from the start. And from that point, went to FAU, lost to a really good FAU team that Eric mentions in our interview. He thinks it might be the best team in the conference, and it's hard to argue. And then, you know, after that, they beat kind of FIU, who's been struggling, and losses to North Texas and Charlotte. And so they're sitting here right now at 3-6 with three games remaining against Rice, Old Dominion, and Western Kentucky. So they are still very much alive for a bowl berth, and that is their marching orders for this coming weekend against Rice, and that's kind of what they have in their sets, whereas the Owls are, I guess, maybe not working towards the same goal. A bowl berth, unfortunately, has long since passed them by, but they have the same sense of urgency and that desire to win, because these are both programs that expected this year, Rice coming off of year zero, to take that next step. And for Rice, just by simple math, if that next step was having more wins than last year, they have three games left, and they had two wins last year. So that would necessitate beating Middle Tennessee, North Texas, and UTEP, which is certainly doable. But again, it's going to take starting with this game. So it's a pretty big game for both programs. And on the Rice side, I think this game, the matchup with Middle, is a bit more tailor-made to the strengths that we thought this team had, you know, kind of coming into the season and have kind of seen throughout the year. We knew that they were going to be good against the run, and that front seven wasn't going to be able to hold their own against good running backs. And we've seen that throughout the year, regardless really of opponent, that Rice has been a tenacious run defense. And I get really a couple deep shots against Marshall were kind of the, I guess, what stood out as some scary moments in the pass defense. But for the most part, I think the defense has been pretty solid, but I think bread and butter has still been stopping that run, especially when you talk about what Blaze Aldridge, who's I think maybe third or fourth in the nation in tackles for loss right now. He's up there, and I think he's had a tackle for loss in eight straight games, which is pretty impressive, with sacks, of course, sprinkled in there. And then you have Antonio Montero, who just set, I think, a career high in tackles last week out against Marshall with 11, or if I'm not mistaken. So with those two playing as good as they are, with the possibility of Rice getting Anthony Ekpe back, it's trending that way. I think he'll be a game time decision. If I had to make a guess at this very moment, I would say that he's probably held out for one more week, and we don't see him again till the North Texas game. But we will be at practice this week, and you know, I'll kind of keep you posted. It's another reason, if you haven't subscribed and you're not yet a member of the site, we'll have some practice updates and injury notes out there, including status reports on those guys like Ekpe, who could be big in this game. So, but all that said, the Middle Tennessee strength is Asher O'Hara, their quarterback, and what he can do with his legs. He's a good thrower, but I think when you compare against guys that Rice has already faced, he's doesn't really scare me to those degree. I think being able to hold down Jamar Smith and Jack Abraham in particular, Isaiah Green probably on par, maybe a little bit above. I think what he's going to pose through the air with his arm and his arm strength shouldn't be something that really takes Rice by surprise. What makes him particularly dangerous in the passing game is what he can do when he rolls out and when he makes the defense defend him as a runner in addition to a passer. And that's really where Rice is going to have to shine. And if Rice can keep him contained, make him throw from the pocket, I think this is going to be a game that the Rice defense can dominate. And that's a tall ask because, I mean, you could argue maybe Sam Ehlinger is the most dual threat quarterback that Rice has faced this year, and he didn't really run much because he didn't really have to because Texas kind of steamrolled and got going through the air, and by halftime it was all done for. But that shouldn't be, and I don't believe that will be the case against O'Hara and Middle Tennessee. And if you can really quiet him out, I mean, there's nobody else on this offense that has proven this year to be that difference maker. I think that they have some playmakers, especially, you know, Ty Lee on the outside, very, very talented wide receiver who's got some wheels and had a lot of promise coming into the year, but has kind of been quiet this year. And that's kind of been the rest of their other skill position guys. It's really who is the outlet for O'Hara when he's, you know, on the move or scrambling or trying to find a guy to move the chains. It's not really the case where I think you'll see from the Rice quarterback of dialing in and trying to get the ball to Austin Trammell and Brad Rosner, just the 1A, 1B options. Or Juma in the backfield. So transitioning over, I guess, to the other side of the ball for both guys, and I mentioned the Rice quarterback, I guess, in quotes, because we're not entirely sure who that is going to be. So Giovanni Johnson took over the offense for the first time this season. He started against Marshall, and I put a couple pieces up about his first start this past week. Go ahead and check that out on the football page. I thought he gave this offense a spark, and it looked different and looked more proficient than it had. And some of that was some tweaks. You probably saw it while you were watching the game. There were a lot more one back sets, a lot more things done out of shotgun and spreading out the offense. I mean, the touchdown came on a receiver screen. Some things like that are a bit more akin to the spread offense, kind of the roots that, you know, Jerry Mack, the offensive coordinator, has versus some of the ground and pound tendencies that Blomgren has been working to instill at South Main. I think that's still where the offense is going, but you know, I think especially for the time being, depending on who's at quarterback, you know, we could see a bit more spread, a bit more of that kind of, I'm not going to say trimmed down, but a bit more honed in and focused offense. And so Giovanni, unfortunately, at the end of that game, he scrambled and ripped off a big run into Marshall territory. I think he got down to like the mid 30, 35, something like that. Went down, got hit on the lower leg and just kind of limped off the field, which was a scary sight. Tom Stewart came in and just was not very effective. He finished one for nine, and his back was in pain, and just it did not go very well. The entire offense after that just kind of went quiet really, really quickly, unfortunately. So that brings us to now after the bye week. So Giovanni was in a walking boot during the bye week with that injury. I believe it was a turf toe of some sort is what he was diagnosed with. Not entirely sure of the severity. The staff is optimistic that he'll be able to go, but I was talking with Coach Blomgren this week, and he noted that a Giovanni that is not feeling well enough to run and improvise and be that kind of option dual threat quarterback doesn't bring the same advantage to this offense that he did a week ago against Marshall. So unless Giovanni is able to really show he's back to 100% in practice, I'm not certain we'll see him, because at this point Tom Stewart's back is healed and doing well, and he's feeling back to close to 100%. And that's going to be really the decision point for the coaching staff. And of course, you have Giovanni's redshirt situation that is kind of hanging in the balance. And we talked about that. I encourage you to go back to last week's edition of the podcast, the back end of that, probably the last 10 minutes or so. We kind of weighed the options of Giovanni's redshirt status and the pros and the cons of burning that red shirt and letting him play the last couple games. So that's weighing in the mind. And then it's really who's going to give this team the best chance to win. I think what we've seen last week against Marshall, that if it's Tom Stewart, which I would say he's probably has the slight edge at this moment when at time of recording, and then we'll see updates Thursday, Friday as we get them. If Giovanni is not good enough to really be a difference maker, I don't think you waste the last game of his redshirt season as, you know, a decoy or at half or, you know, 80%. But if it is Tom Stewart, I think you'll see the same kind of offensive philosophy or a similar one that they installed when Giovanni was at the helm last week. Some of those, you know, simpler reads, those quick outs, and then trusting Tom as a runner to make good decisions and help Rice try and move the ball that way. And it's going to really, the receivers are going to have to step up and make plays. It would be great if August Pete and Jake Bailey have kind of had moments, but they really haven't had just a game-changing play like I know they're both capable of, and we've seen these are both some fast guys. And August Pete has vertical ability and might be able to get higher than anybody on the team, even Rosner, because of his ability to high point the football. And so we've seen him kind of in the red zone, but maybe not in some more, you know, sideline variety plays down the field. So I don't know if that's going to be an option, but I think we need to see something more from those guys. And then Juma is and can be the difference maker. The Middle Tennessee defense, without some of their key pieces in the front seven, they're vulnerable against good running backs. And Juma is a fantastic running back. And so if Rice can get, I mean, I think the ideal game script is really what we saw Rice do against Old Dominion, because if you'll remember that game, Wiley Green started that game with Juma in the backfield, and Wiley got nicked up, and Sean Stankavich came in, I think it was right around halftime, and he didn't attempt a pass, because the rest of the game, Rice just turned and handed the ball off to Juma, and I think he finished with, what, like 224 yards, something like that, in that game. And that's really where I think Rice finds the ideal scenario in this game, that maybe you do it a little bit out of more of a spread, more of an open formation to kind of minimize defenders in the box and give Juma his best chance to break some tackles and get down the field. But I think that's the ideal script that you're looking for. So that's on the offensive side. I think that's it. And then just kind of big picture, as we've kind of said a couple times now, there's nobody in Conference USA that is unbeatable. And we've seen Rice play three of the top five offenses in the conference, and I guess it was Louisiana Tech, Southern Miss, and was it Marshall, maybe? Possibly. I'm probably forgetting somebody obvious, but either way, we've seen Rice hang tough and be stingy and obviously, honestly, really, really good against some of the better offenses. And this is an offense that is the number one rushing offense in the country, in the conference. So they're not bad, but we've seen Rice dominate against the run first and power running kind of offenses that they've faced. I think what they were able to do against Army, what they were able to do against Baylor in particular, like I think Louisiana Tech really didn't get as much going on the ground as they would have thought. If Rice can play disciplined, sound, fundamental football, which I think you can kind of equate this team is more offensively kind of geared toward a service academy look than certainly the spread looks that they've played the last couple weeks. If Rice can stay fundamentally sound and not let anybody beat them over the top, then they can realistically hold middle to a touchdown or two. You know, when they had that blocked field goal last week, and if the defense can do that, and the offense can find a couple explosive plays, and it doesn't have to be 80-yard touchdowns. Like, I would settle for maybe a 25-yard pass, like a couple of those scattered in to where you can cut out the need to have 7 first downs to drive down and score, and you can get 3 first downs and one of them on a big play. I really do think that this is a game that Rice should be in for the duration. If we've learned anything about watching this team so far, it's probably going to be close. It's probably going to be down to the wire. And what we haven't seen yet is Rice close it out. And it's not going to be easy to do on the road. Blomgren and his staff have yet to win a game on the road in their tenure at Rice. So this would be a big win for those guys. But it's certainly possible. And I know that everything around the program this week has been bent on that the staff wants it, these players want it, and I think they're preparing in a way that's going to give them a chance. And I think that's what we'd expect, and we expect kind of them to take that progression, especially on offense, and turn it into points. And if they can do that, it should be, you know, hopefully it turns out better than the last couple, and it will make things interesting. Certainly, it'll be another step in the right direction, because this program needs to show some improvement as they kind of wind down the last couple weeks, especially with the last home game of the season coming the week after against North Texas. So those are kind of some big picture and some matchup thoughts on Middle Tennessee. Thank you guys for working through that with me in Carter's absence. And then we're going to go ahead and make one more transition. Next, we will have an interview with Eric at Underdog Dynasty. And I've gotten to know him really well over the past, I guess, couple years. And if any of y'all bought the Roos season preview, I worked really, really close with them hand in hand as we kind of worked through the FIU portion of that. And then just we've been really bouncing ideas back and forth, and have loved helping out with him and the work they're doing. And he's been a huge asset to the Roos. So this was actually the first time that we actually had the chance to sit down and talk over the phone, which was nice to get a voice to a name. But it was really, really fun conversation. I think I learned a lot, big picture thoughts about the conference, kind of his angle on some things, and I think you'll enjoy it. So give it a listen, and here's Eric. We're joined by Eric Henry today of Underdog Dynasty, kind of a perfect turning point in the season with Rice coming off their second bye week, and kind of a good place to look back and kind of survey what's happened in Conference USA and take a look ahead at the last couple weeks, talk some Rice, talk a conference, the whole championships and what have you. But first things first, Eric, thank you for joining the show.
Not a problem, man. It's great to actually sit down and talk with you. I know we've communicated over email and Twitter and DM and every other social media platform out there, but we've never actually talked and chopped it up over the phone, man. So it's great to actually sit down and talk with you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. We're both real people.
Exactly, right? that's a surprise in this. The Twitter thing is always interesting, you know, when you meet people who you've had interaction with on Twitter. And that happens to me a lot in the press box where it just happened last week at FAU. I met Ken LaVica, who's the FAU play-by-play guy, you know, the voice of FAU athletics. And, you know, we've gone back and forth on Twitter for probably about a year now. And then it just kind of shocked me when he's like, "Hey, Eric, how's it going, man?" It's like, "Oh, crap. Yeah. I guess we should probably say something to each other in person, right?" So, that's how the social media world works.
You have the bonus of you have your picture on your profile. I have the company logo, support the brand and whatnot. So, I guess my face is an enigma. I guess it's on the website if you want to go dig. But you know, well, this is why it's an audio only form, and nobody has to stare at my mug. So.
Yeah, that makes it's definitely great for both of us, man. We definitely need to be behind the camera in that regard.
It works out, and I guess a transition over to some people in the spotlight right now. I think there's probably no better place to start than probably I'd say the biggest surprise in Conference USA, at least after the first week of the season, with Western Kentucky and the turnaround that Tyson Helton has happened there. I would wager to say they're on the short list of teams that have lost to an FCS school in a state and then beaten a Power 5 school in the same state by the end of the season. Did you have any inkling this was coming after week one? Because I certainly didn't.
Not at all. You can ask my podcast co-host Joe Londergan over there on the Conference USA podcast that we do. He's the resident Western Kentucky guy, and both of us had been down on Western. It's funny, Matt. We had a chance to talk to Tyson Helton at CUSA Media Days, and he may have been the only person in that room who sounded as confident as, you know, he was in his team. He was just like, "Hey, you know, I come from a family of coaches. I know I'm a first-time head coach, but, you know, I'm not someone who doesn't have a lot of experience being around head coaches, and I have the experience come from a coaching family, obviously, you know, Clay Helton and Kim Helton, his father." So he sounded very confident, you know, and he'd had the previous stop at Western Kentucky before. So he was like, "Hey, I don't think this is a rebuilding thing. I think we need to go in there, just evaluate the talent we have. And I like what I've seen from the guys so far." So to answer your question, I think there may have been only one person, you know, on this planet, or maybe the guys, you know, inside that locker room, maybe they believed as well. But Tyson Helton didn't doubt, but I certainly did. So I didn't see it coming, especially after the loss of Central Arkansas, because they lost last year to Maine. And I just thought that losing to an FCS team consecutive years, you know, just really demoralized the fan base and the players, but they've rebounded well. And, you know, give credit to that defense, D'Angelo Malone, Juwan Jones, etc. You know, they've really turned it around.
Yeah, and you mentioned new head coaches. I feel like, especially at Media Days, we heard the same kind of, and I mean, what coach is not going to be confident the day after, the months after they land the job? But I feel like Will Healy at Charlotte kind of had the same charismatic exuberance and excitement about getting his new spot. And things started pretty well for the 49ers, and then I guess he kind of admitted a couple weeks in that this head coaching thing, even at the Group of Five level, might have been a bit more than he was bargaining for, and he's kind of had to reassess.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And if anyone, you know, has ever encounters Will Healy, the guy just oozes enthusiasm. You know, he's a young guy, 33 years old, so he just has that young kind of spirit, that energetic mentality that, you know, the exact quote when you talked about he had some doubts about maybe, you know, turning things around as quickly. His exact quote was that he thought he could just kind of walk in there and just provide energy, you know, just insert a boost of energy and things would turn around. And he realized that, you know, hey, in Conference USA, yeah, it might not be the American, it might not be the Mountain West, but there's still a lot of really good programs in here. It's going to take more than just energy to go in on Saturdays and get a W. Now, of course, it looks like, you know, he's kind of come out the other end. They had a 3-game losing streak and now they've won they had a 3-game losing streak. Now they've won 3 in a row, if my memory serves me correct. So, you know, they're right there. They're one win away from bowl contention. But I was a little higher on Charlotte than I was Western. You know, when you have guys like Benny LeMay, guys like Alex Highsmith, I'm a Chris Reynolds fan, Victor Tucker, they have some pieces. The issue with Charlotte wasn't necessarily that they didn't have some talent. It was, did they have enough talent and that depth to compete? And it looks like, you know, they're right there. If they can get one win in the final two games, I believe they have Marshall and Old Dominion, if my memory serves me correct, they will be able to get the six.
Yeah, and I remember talking with you. Maybe we certainly weren't the only ones, but we both were pretty high on Charlotte entering the season because of especially the talent they had at some of the skill positions. It's just whether or not they were going to be able to find a quarterback. And I guess they have found enough to keep going. And it's pretty incredible, especially when you consider that there's been several new head coaches that have come into this league recently. And to be able to find success and get to the point where you can be in a bowl like Helton in year one and then like Charlotte be knocking on the door. It's almost as if the collective floor of this conference has kind of taken a little bit step up from where it's been.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if I'd say the collective floor is taking a step up because in my opinion, you have a defined floor, right? You know, unfortunately, you know, I hate to do this on your pod, you know, but Rice is rebuilding. But listen, anyone who's watched Rice over the past 2 years, they fight hard every single game. It's just a matter of, you know, turning that, you know, fighting hard for four quarters and turning that to victories. But you have the Rices, the UTEPs, the UTSAs, the ODUs. That's like your defined floor. And then in my opinion, the rest of the teams, you know, you have that mid-grade, which is your Charlottes, you know, your quote-unquote Western Kentuckys and teams like that, UTSAs, who they're right there. You know, they might have a chance to get four or five, or they can make the leap up and go to a bowl game. And then you have the rest of the league, which can just be a crapshoot. You know, like look at UNT, look at FIU. Those are two teams who heading into the year, you thought were going to be perennial division favorites. They look like they're in danger of not making a bowl. So I just think that, you know, CUSA is always wide open if you have enough talent to at least escape that floor.
Yeah, and actually that kind of brings me to what I was thinking next when you were kind of tearing out the teams. I think North Texas and FIU, you mentioned coming into the year, I mean, reasonably, they were in the top five of preseason projections by most people, if not the top two or three. What's happened? I mean, particularly with North Texas, the back-to-back preseason pick to win the conference. I know Mason Fine has been beat up, but I mean, you're talking about a coach who was the darling of many Power Five jobs in the offseason and all the talent of the world on offense. It's kind of surprising. They need to, if I'm correct, win out or close to get back to a bowl. And that's kind of surprising.
Yeah, you're right. North Texas does have to win out to win to make it to a bowl game or at least to qualify because, you know, once again, six is that number that will qualify you. But there are a lot of group of five teams this year who would be ahead of CUSA in terms of just, you know, maybe selections from those bowls. But to answer your question, I think it's the same thing with both FIU and North Texas. It's defense. You know, FIU's defense, the secondary is phenomenal, but the run defense has been an issue for the better part of 2 years since I've been covering the team. And North Texas has just been giving up chunks of yards to any team who plays them. And that's been surprising. I mean, the thing with North Texas over Mason Fine's era has always been they can win a shootout, right? Like they've always made enough stops to give Mason Fine the ball back to where he can throw five touchdowns. I mean, the dude in his last start, full start, you know, threw seven. It's not like he can't, you know, be a gunslinger. But this year, they just haven't made enough stops. And that's disappointing because you don't want to see a guy like Mason Fine end his career, you know, outside bowl contention and not gain a chance to spotlight. And even James Morgan is a guy who Butch Davis said might be one of the most talented quarterbacks he's ever coached. You know, still a pretty solid NFL prospect, but he's been banged up all year. The offensive line, you know, took some losses. And it's a shame because there's no lack of talent on those two teams, but it just goes to show you. You know, Conference USA can flip on a dime if you don't come every year.
Yeah, which is particularly incredible. And for Fine, I know he got beat up the last time out, and then we'll see how. I mean, he's been hurt all season, but whether or not he's actually able to finish out his college career upright and on the turf, which has been, you know, you'd really hate to see for arguably one of the best passers in conference history to go out like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's, I just wrote it in my three things we learned about Conference USA piece for week 11. Heading into that game, which he was knocked out, I believe he only had 46 yards. He was knocked out early in that game, but he had an outside shot of making it the fourth all time in conference history. You know, with, I believe he needed, I'm going to try to remember the number off the top of my head. I want to say it was 871 yards in his final three starts, which, I mean, it's Mason Fine. That's not, you know, he can easily put up 300.
Well within reason.
Yeah, well, within reason. So, you know, the cracking that top three would have been a little bit aggressive. But, you know, yeah, he had a chance to really make his way up the CUSA leaderboards in terms of all-time career passing yards. So it looks like if this is the end of his career, he's going to stick in eighth place all time, which is a shame because, like I said, it's not that that far out of reach for his a quarterback of his caliber.
Yeah, and only eighth, not to sure. diminish. Like,
sure,
pretty lofty air to begin with. And I guess moving down the line, or I guess up the line in the West, we have two teams that have had kind of interesting years. But on the offensive front, I know that we talked about this coming into the year, but Southern Miss arguably has the most explosive and fun offense to watch in Conference USA. And Jack Abraham and those receivers have been a delight to just watch them make touchdown after big play after kick return. They are kind of, I guess, right behind Louisiana Tech in the pecking order now to win the conference, but they got to still have a shot if they can score in bunches like they can, right?
My goodness, you want to talk about an exciting offense. The first offensive play, or not even the first offensive play, it was the first play of the year for Southern Miss. Jalen Adams takes the kickoff back 100 yards. Yeah, but, you know, Quez Watkins is a guy who, once again, I've been a huge fan of his since the second he arrived in Conference USA. He had some academic issues in which it seemed like his availability for this year might have been in doubt. But the fact that you pair him with Jalen Adams, both speed guys, and a quarterback like Jack Abraham, who I have to, you know, I have to admit my fault here. I wasn't down, Matt, on Jack Abraham. It was more so I was curious, was he a product of the system? Because last year, he, if my memory serves me correct, he led FBS in completion percentage with about 72% completion percentage. But he only threw for, you know, under 2,000 yards. It wasn't like he was pushing the ball down the field.
Might have even been a better completion percentage than that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Might have been like 74, 75, but he wasn't pushing the ball down the field. So I was really down on him and wondering, okay, is he a guy who's a product of an offense and dink and dunk? But hey, give credit to, you know, Buster Faulkner's coming there as a new offensive coordinator, and they're pushing the ball down the field, and he's keeping the same numbers. So that offense is dynamic. And you mentioned it, they're right there at Louisiana Tech. Unfortunately for Southern Miss fans, they did lose their matchup with Louisiana Tech. Amik Robertson picked them off. I want to say Amik Robertson picked them off three times. I know it was two or
couple,
three times.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that was a fun game. You talk about some of the best games in the conference this year. That was a shootout with and it wasn't like a just points for points. It was big plays and fun plays.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll ask you this. I mean, you're out there closer to the West. Sometimes I don't get a chance to watch those games until the back end when I'm out of the press box. What are your thoughts on Tech? Because, you know, I was down on Tech heading into the year, and even when you look at Tech's wins, there are six of them that you can say aren't against quote unquote top notch competition. But with that being said, they have the wins. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on Louisiana Tech?
Well, I mean, so Tech didn't lead for a second in regulation or overtime against Rice until the very final play. It was as close as you can get against, you'd mentioned it, a team that fights hard, but doesn't have any wins yet. So that was one of the red flags. But I think, and I even went as far to say that I thought in the preseason that this could be the team that goes out and wins the West, not because I think necessarily that their upside on offense or defense is necessarily the best in the conference, but I think just top to bottom, they're one of the most balanced and complete teams. They have depth and they have playmakers on both sides of the ball. And the issue for Skip Holtz and Tech, from my perspective, has not been their ability. They've been able to go out and play and beat the best of the best in this conference. It's been when they come up to, you know, the old Dominions or the UTSAs or the Rices or the Western Kentuckys or just not the superpowers. And they have had a propensity just to kind of lay an egg or two or three, which is why, you know, I think they've won five bowl games in a row or at least a bit. Is that right? I believe that's correct. They've been a good team and they can play with anybody. It's just, can they make it a full season? And I think one of these years they were going to have to, and it might be this year.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with the play of Jamar Smith, who this has finally been the year that he's turned on and has been that consistent quarterback. He hasn't, you know, that's a guy who's super talented. I mean, you just see it out there, but he's had those games where it's been, all right, I'm going to throw for 300 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. And then you think, all right, he's turned the corner. And then he follows that up with a game where he goes, you know, 16 of 35 for a 180, one touchdown, two interceptions. And you can't do that when you got a dynamic playmaker like Adrian Hardy out there. And the running game this year is really, I mean, that kid, you know, Justin Henderson came out of nowhere along with Jaquiss Dancy. And then we know they have the Willie Bakers and Amik Robertson. So, yeah, I think part of Tech's inconsistency has really gone along with, you know, I hate to lay it all at the feet of the quarterback, but I think it's been a Jamar Smith thing.
Yeah, I mean, and absolutely. And I think that was one of the things when they played Rice that he wasn't spectacular. But he made enough plays, and at the end of the game, when Tech needed him to put the team on his shoulders and get in the end zone, I mean, he carried several defenders across the end line and won the game. And that's been the difference. The quote that I always go back to, and I don't remember you were in this scrum at Media Days or not, was Skip Holtz said that Conference USA is like NASCAR and that every team has the same sized engine. It's just about who drives it the best on any given Saturday. And I think that's kind of been the perfect microcosm for Tech's season is that, you know, I don't know if they're all that much better. I don't think they have a better offense than Southern Miss. And I don't think they have a better defense than Western Kentucky, but yet they're the only undefeated team left in conference.
It's funny you say that because I actually think the best team in Conference USA is Florida Atlantic. I think that they played a hell of a schedule to open the year. You know, when you look at some of their defensive numbers, for example, I believe they're 11th or 12th in pass defense, but that's because they played the Ohio States. They played UCF when UCF was, you know, still high powered. Not to say that they are now, but they were still at their peak. You know, they played Ball State, which has a tremendous passing offense. So I'm actually higher on Florida Atlantic than I am Louisiana Tech at this point.
Yeah, and I think when they played, because it was Ohio State and UCF right off the bat, and they started out 0-2 and kind of fell out of the spotlight, for lack of a better word, and then they've just kind of been consistent. They had that one hiccup. I believe their loss was to Marshall.
Correct.
And so that creates an entire dynamic in the East. But if it does get to the point of it's Louisiana Tech against FAU in the championship game, you would lean towards FAU?
I would lean towards FAU. I think they're playing their best football right now. And yeah, you know, maybe some of that is recency bias because I just left FAU Stadium on Saturday and saw them, you know, run through the Panthers. But I really believe in Chris Robinson. I think he's turned the corner. To be honest with you, if we're taking a quarterback matchup, I might take Chris Robinson. Wow. Malcolm Davidson, I think he's going to be a stud at running back. Larry McCammon was the guy who had gotten most of the carries, the kid out of Hoover High School in Alabama. But Malcolm Davidson has stepped up, and he's just as talented as any of their backs. Trey Mason, the Auburn former Auburn running back, his younger brother Chauncey Mason is stepping up. D'Angelo, of course, I'm going to forget his last name. Right? D'Angelo Antoine, the South Florida transfer. Harrison Bryant, Rashad Smith. I mean, just have studs all over the field. And I genuinely believe when you look at who FAU has played in relation to who La Tech has played and who's playing their best football right now, I would give the edge to FAU. Now, with that being said, it does appear as if that is the conference championship matchup, the game will be in Ruston, and that can make a big difference.
And it's assuming that both head coaches are in place and have not accepted any other offers elsewhere. I know Lane Kiffin has quelled. He said he was not interested in Florida State. Or at least he tweeted that he would prefer. What are the coach speak he used online? He said he was going to be happy to be in Boca Raton next year. I don't think he ever outright said, I will not take that job. But we'll see.
Matt, let me ask you this. Because you were at Media Days, right?
Yeah.
Did you talk to Lane? Did you stay for the East Days?
No, I didn't get the chance to sit down with him.
Okay. See, I missed the West Days. I was only in for the East Days. I Okay, I'm not saying that Lane Kiffin is going to be at FAU till he's 80 years old like he's Bobby Bowden, all right? Like, I do think eventually he will want the opportunity to play for a national title again. But there is a certain level of resignation and calm and appreciation that, guess what? This dude could walk around Boca Raton and go to Publix and get his, you know, sub and buy his groceries and people aren't in his business. As opposed to when you're the head coach at Tennessee, that's not a thing. When you're the head coach at SC, you get fired on a tarmac and it's national news. I do believe personally that he will stay longer than people think. I mean, the guy, he takes his boat to his weekly coach's show. He lives on the water, takes his boat and drives up and pulls up to
one
the coach's
of the few
shows.
Coaches in the country that can say that.
That can say that. So, you know, I won't go on too much longer about that, but I do want to, you know, put it out there that I do believe Lane will be in Conference USA a few more years than people are expecting. So I'll give him that. Skip Holtz, that's another one. You know, we had a chance to see him here in Tampa at USF when he took, quote unquote, that next level job. Didn't work out. So maybe he's had an appreciation for what success he can have at the lower level. I don't know. I just think that, in my opinion, the next coach who probably would be gone, I still think you have to look at Luttrell. I think you still have to look at Bill Clark. Yes, I know Bill Clark signed the extension, but, you know, the money that P5 jobs can offer is another level than, you know, UAB.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if I were kind of going down the list of who was most likely to be moving on next, I think Luttrell and Clark, from what they were able to accomplish this year and even in I mean, you can call it relatively down years after the heights they'd reached. They've both done a pretty good job with the talent they have, but the healthy talent they have to keep moving forward. I guess UAB's last game out notwithstanding.
Sure, exactly.
But and then I guess circling around, we kind of talked about, you know, some of the big picture things. I wanted to get kind of your scoop on Middle Tennessee sitting over there in the East, and Rice has a matchup with them this weekend and still looking forward for that first win. And at least on paper, it looks like if you can stop Asher O'Hara, then you got Middle Tennessee beat. The problem is not many people have been able to do that. Is it going to be that simple for the Rice defense this weekend?
Matt, it doesn't matter whether it's been Asher O'Hara or Brent Stockstill. Over the course of time, Rick Stockstill and Tony Franklin, they like to run that offense through the quarterback. You know, it's like a point guard in basketball. Everything runs through them. Asher O'Hara is not, and this is a guy I've watched. I went to grad school right outside of Chicago, so I had a chance to see him when he was a JUCO kid at the College of DuPage. So I've been watching him for the past 3 years. He's not the most developed passer, but he's a poor man's Chris Reynolds in that he just has a ton of intangibles. But athletically speaking, in terms of on the ground, by the time you look up, he has 150 yards. And he's not Lamar Jackson. You know, he's not, you know, a guy who's going to break one for 75 unless you're FIU, in which case he will break one for 75. But he's a guy who's going to. Yeah, exactly. You know, that was a rough one to sit through. He's a guy who's going to gash you for 10, 12, 8. 12, 15 consistently. And that's what Rice fans have to worry about if you're defending him. But even on the outside, like I said, you know, guys like Ty Lee and the rest of their receivers, they've had pedestrian years. And this isn't the slight Asher. He's just not the most developed passer yet. And also, you look at even their backfield, you would think that, okay, they have the quarterback who can run. So maybe their running backs get some yardage as well. The only team, I can say this as someone who covers FIU, the only team that those running backs have broke out against this year was FIU. Now, once again, if you're a Rice fan, you want to look out for Terrell West and Jay McDonald. Those are two very much speed backs, guys who, if you take bad angles, if you, you know, over pursue and let them cut back, they can go 80 yards in a hurry. I believe Jay McDonald is a track guy at Middle Tennessee State. I know both he and Terrell West were track guys in high school. So that would be the thing I would say if you're a Rice fan, you have to look out for. Defensively, they lost Reed Blankenship for the year. So really one of the top, you know, defenders in Conference USA they don't have. The rest of the defense has really struggled. Guys like DQ Thomas and Khalil Brooks, talented guys, but they've really struggled. So, yeah, I think if you are the Owls, it starts and ends with Asher O'Hara.
Yeah, and I mean, from Rice's perspective, I think that's something that they haven't really seen as much as a true dual threat quarterback. They've played some guys that can move and can run. I mean, as Sam Ellinger was probably one of those, but he picked Rice apart in the pocket and didn't have to venture out too much. So I think this is going to be the first time and probably one of the few guys in Conference USA from the quarterback position that really runs, maybe runs first would be a fair way to say it, and runs as much as he does. So it's going to be interesting because the touch point that I kind of see in this game is going to be the Rice offense, of course, has struggled, you know, one touchdown the past two games. But like you mentioned, the Middle Tennessee defense has been, I mean, not great and beat up. And it's going to be interesting to see. We know that the Middle Tennessee offense can move and the Rice defense can stop people. What's going to happen on the other side of the ball? I think that's the unknown that might end up, you know, playing a bigger role in this game than the two units that are rolling well.
Yeah, I mean, I think personally this is a great game for Rice, especially at the quarterback position, because whether it's Giovanni Johnson or, you know, I know I'd seen some things that, you know, Tom Stewart might be back. Whoever's lining up at quarterback for Rice, they're going to have their opportunities. You know, personally, I'd like to see Rice go with the younger player. I'm just a fan of, you know, preparing for the future. I don't know if we've seen what ODU did with Hayden Wolf, just putting him out there and he's been able to respond and, you know, answer the call. But I absolutely think for Rice heading into this game, like I said, Middle Tennessee State's defense, it's weird. They're talented, but they just haven't played up to that talent, you know, and especially with Reed Blankenship being out, you got to take your chances. DQ Thomas, Khalil Brooks, two names that I mentioned, Malik Manseal as well on the defensive line. Those are all really talented guys, but the sum of all parts hasn't come together to equal a good defense, you know? And yeah, part of that is the same thing with FAU because they had the Power Five schedule to open up. They had Duke, Iowa, Michigan to open up. I got those correct. Yeah. Those mm-hmm. three. So part of that, you know, plays a factor, but just, they've just never recovered from those opening weeks. So yeah, like I said, if you're Rice, I think you absolutely, you know, if you can get your playmakers involved, there's a chance for the offense to really break out and have some success.
It would be nice to see. I know we're all hoping for it in Houston to get one on the board. They've been close, but not quite pushed one over. But we'll see. I guess closing thoughts. I had two things that I wanted to pick your brain on as we head out. The first thing was, you know, we talked about the top end of the conference and kind of collectively have said that there's not really, I mean, especially if you look at like maybe the Mountain West or the American, there's not really a team or two teams that have really distanced themselves and put themselves at a higher echelon than everybody else. But Louisiana Tech has one loss this year. It's to a Texas team that is going to probably finish the year on the cusp of being ranked. Is there a shot for Conference USA to get a New Year's Six Bowl?
I don't think so. And then once again, it's not a shot at RCUSA
teams. And then what's it going to take? Because this is not the first year that Conference USA has been here, and it's been several since, you know, there's been really a team that you felt belonged in that conversation.
That is a really good question. So for those of you guys listening, I went to UCF, the University of Central Florida, and I, having spent time there, I think I was kind of bred to believe that the American is, quote unquote, the top G5 conference. Now, having covered CUSA for the past 2 years, I'm a huge believer in that there are some CUSA teams who, on their best year, can compete with any G5 team. But to specifically answer your question, what's it going to take? I think it's going to take the perception of Conference USA and the Sun Belt being the lesser leagues. I think that's the easiest way I can say it. And I mean, I guess to give you something that's not, you know, kind of pie in the sky, maybe a hypothetical, it would take a schedule like Middle Tennessee State played this year or the Florida Atlantic's played this year, where you go to a couple Power Five teams. And maybe if you beat one or two of those, you know, if you play three of them and you beat two and then you take care of business and you win out the rest of your conference schedule, I think then you give yourself a chance to at least be in the ball game with the Mountain West and the Americans, you know, because UCF, for better or worse, you know, it depends on, you know, your feelings about them and their fan base and their athletic director and whatnot. But for better or worse, they're now synonymous with G5 football. So when anyone thinks of G5, if UCF has a 10-0 record, they're going to think, all right, let's put them in. as opposed to maybe a Middle Tennessee State who could be just as good. You know, no one's thinking about MTSU or Rice or FIU or et cetera. So I think that's kind of the formula.
Yeah, it's that old, I guess the Boise is the guys who pioneered it. Maybe Utah
right.
to some degree, but just playing and winning and winning and winning and winning and winning till all of the Power Five teams don't want to play you anymore, and they begrudgingly have to rank you among them and start inviting you to the party.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
All right. Well, that was one wishful thinking, and then I guess on a more Conference USA here and now. No, what's maybe one thing or two things that you're really just following? I know we have 3 weeks left plus conference championship game. Is it title races? Is it individual players? Is it bowl eligibility for certain teams? What's kind of the thing that really has your eye over the last final weeks?
No, sure. Yeah. So absolutely title races. I want to see, you know, first off, Marshall, you want to talk about a Conference USA team that just is consistent. Doc Holliday, well-respected around this league year in, year out. And they're never the ones who are going to make the most noise, you know, in terms of actual, you know, talking. But they let their play on the field do the talking. They're right there. Can they beat FAU? They have the tiebreaker. They did go to Boca and win. So if they win out, they'll be, you know, represented from the East. Definitely want to see what happens in the West. Can Southern Miss sneak back in there? Coaching carousel situations. You know, I'm going to keep my eye on that. You know, never want to see anyone lose their job, because guess what? There's a lot of families who are affected. But right now, you got to keep an eye. Frank Wilson, they've got 4 wins. Does 5 get him another year? Lisa Campos is the new AD over there in San Antonio, and she did not hire Frank Wilson. So that's something you got to keep an eye on. Bobby Wilder at ODU. You know, he's the program's only coach that they've had since their restart, you know, in the modern era of football. You got to keep an eye on that as well. And then just from there, you know, I'll be keeping an eye on some of the players, you know, some of the guys who maybe are our Conference USA NFL talents, you know, the quarterbacks. Definitely want to see if James Morgan, he's not necessarily fully healthy right now, but I think from a overall NFL prototype quarterback perspective, he's probably the best we have. So you want to keep an eye on that. You know, guys like Harrison Bryant, who we think is going to be a stud. You know, just want to see which guys can kind of give themselves that last push as we head into bowl season. And then, of course, you know, senior bowl season and things like that. So those are things that we keep an eye on. And then, of course, recruiting. You know, I think recruiting is the lifeblood of I sound like Butch Davis here. That's a direct quote from him. I'm sorry, guys, for that coach speak. But I think
because you've heard it once or twice, I'd imagine.
I've heard it once or twice. But genuinely, I think recruiting is the lifeblood of this conference. And if you're someone who follows recruiting as closely as I do, this conference is getting a lot of talent. You know, they're getting better and better each year. So I definitely want to see, you know, who are going to be those 3-star guys, maybe, you know, borderline 4-star guys who you might think are going to a Power 5 school and make the last minute choice to go to CUSA. So I'll be keeping my eyes on that down the stretch.
So what you're saying is we were talking offline about how, you know, we can't believe, of course, that the season is almost over, but it's almost over and then it's not.
But exactly.
That's the life of college athletics, is it not?
You nailed it, man. It's almost over and then it's not, man. You know, for me, I'll have a couple weeks downtime, and then after covering some bowl games, it'll be time to start checking out recruiting and see how it goes. So, but hey, it could be worse, right?
Hey, there have been rougher gigs.
most definitely, my man.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us, Eric. Where can we find you and follow you?
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at Eric, E-R-I-C, C, Henry, H-E-N-R-Y, _. You can find my work at Underdog Dynasty, which is, you know, SB Nation's home for G5 football coverage. And also a little side project we have going on, you know, if you're passionate about CUSA, because we do talk CUSA as well. You can find us the Shula Bowl podcast is something we do with FAU and FIU, a couple guys. We just have fun, you know, just talk all things CUSA and all things FAU and FIU. That can be found at Shula Bowl Pod on Twitter. And that's it, man.
You're keeping busy, man. I love it.
Absolutely. Well,
thanks for joining. It was good to hear a voice to the name. Eventually, I'll put a face to the name, maybe Media Days or something next year. But I appreciate you coming on, and best of luck to you rest of the season.
Hey, man, anytime. You've been great to me, and you've always, you know, kind of had me on to do little things here and there. So I'm glad we can finally talk. And yeah, Media Days, hopefully next year we can, you know, put a face to everything and we can talk in person. Appreciate it.
All right. Signing out. Rice Fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.